All right, everybody. I'm so excited to be back. I actually consider today's broadcast of the Manifestor Mindset a public service, because I know you're sitting out there right now hitting refresh on CNN over and over and over again and trying to figure out what's going on in Michigan. Where are those votes in Wayne County? What's going on in Wisconsin? And how is it only 8,000 ahead in Nevada? And how is it that poll workers managed to don't start counting till 11 o'clock in the morning? Well, they know we have an election. So this is meant for you to take a step back and just breathe deeply, take a half an hour of your life where we won't talk about it. So I thought, who can I have on the Manifestor Mindset that would be a great guest, but that also would be in a Zen state of mind on the most contentious day in American history, or one of them? And I thought, a Canadian, right? So I'm here with Jesse Palmer, amazing guy, born in Ontario. That's why he looks so peaceful, although he is in New York today. But Jesse is a great friend, has had a remarkable career, is just getting started, was an NFL quarterback, has become a huge TV personality, and we'll get into that. He's also just one of the nicest guys in the world, but what I find fascinating is how he's reinvented himself seemingly effortlessly, and I suspect that we're just getting started. So, Jesse, it's so good to have you here.
Matt, it's so great not to talk politics. Great to be with you, brother.
Can we do just a little bit? Like, can we just talk about Canada?
Canadian politics, yeah. You guys want to talk about Justin Trudeau? Here I am. You know,
just seems like the kinder, gentler parallel universe. I mean, I always liked, even before this period of troubles, I would always love to go to Toronto. I have business there. And I would cross the border, and everything was always so nice. And then about, I'd say 3.5 years ago, the Mounties weren't so friendly anymore. Like, just, you know, like the tenor changed.
It's been a facade, really. The first 150 years, it was the Canadian nice thing was really just a facade. We're turning up the heat now. And now you're really getting to see who we are. But it's true. Like you said, you know, whenever you just need, you know, when this pandemic thing is over and the borders reopen, Montreal, that's a 6-hour drive for us. That is close. Great poutine, great beer. There's a lot of fresh air, a lot of nice things in Canada right now.
And like, how is Canada looking upon their little cousin to the south these days? It's just, you know.
You know, there's these funny cartoons that always end up showing up in Canadian newspapers and magazines, and it's a photo of like this quaint little neighborhood in the suburbs somewhere, and there's like a moose family out on the lawn of their house, yeah. They're hanging out, and there's like a little kid mini pool, and the kid moose is in it, and they got a barbecue going, and then across the street, their neighbors, the United States, there's like a giant dumpster fire happening on their lawn. So that's basically, I think that's kind of sums up how Canadians sort of see everything that's been happening, I think, for several years now.
Well, so Jesse, we have, thanks to the wonder of technology, the ability to now have questions pop up on the right. So if you see me not making eye contact with you, it's not that I'm not interested. It's that I'm scanning the questions coming in. So send the questions. Again, try to keep them non-political, although you can ask me political questions too. You know, I've had a whole another life in politics, as most people know. But I thought this should be just like a little bit of a CBD drink, you know, like a recess. I'm an investor in it. There's a plug. Just think of it like you took a little CBD gummy. We're just gonna glide into the afternoon. Speaking in a little bit, so this will be your afternoon interlude. But so, Jess, for those who don't know, if you could just set the stage a little bit about what you have, all these different talents in one 6'20", you know, package. I don't know how tall you are, but you know, very tall. And your hair gives you an
extra. I was going to say, yeah, just in case you're wondering, 6'2 with the hair 6'6".
That's a 6'6". All right, so extra portion of hair.
A lot of lift.
Was being an NFL player like the ultimate destination, or did you always know you were going to have this layered career?
No, to me, it was always, it started and ended with football. As simple as that. My dad was a professional football player in the Canadian Football League. We grew up in Nepean, Ontario. He took me to go watch Ottawa Rough Rider games, and J.C. Watts, the former great Oklahoma Sooner and politician himself, actually, he was my childhood hero growing up. He was a quarterback that I wanted to emulate. And I decided when I was 7 years old, I wanted to play in the National Football League. The problem, obviously, growing up in Canada is that it's a country dominated by hockey. Every kid grows up wanting to skate. They go to power skating classes. They start when they're 6 years old. And you know, it's tough when you're in school and you're growing up, and like when you're in like the fourth grade, the teacher on the first day of school makes you go to the front of the classroom and say your name and what you want to be. You say, I want to be a pro quarterback in the NFL, and the teacher kind of gives you a pat on the head. That's cute. Nice. Okay. That's never going to happen, and kind of sits you back in your chair. You know, it was interesting because there were so many stereotypes growing up because it was impossible. There had never been a Canadian trained quarterback play in the National Football League. Mark Rippon was Canadian, but he played high school in the States. But that for me was the start and the end. And I went to school. I got lucky and got a scholarship at the University of Florida. Played for a legendary coach in Steve Spurrier, and achieved my dream. I got drafted by the New York Giants, which was one of the greatest days of my life. I got 2 degrees in college, one in marketing with a minor in education, one in political science with a certificate of international relations, but had zero background in television or media. We have a great communication school. My best friend and teammate was in the journalism school. I had zero interest. And it wasn't until I got to New York and really got lucky getting drafted in a media market capital like New York, which I think started to open up possibilities and opportunities for me in different venues, be it arena football and broadcasting or some other sort of TV opportunities that weren't necessarily football related, where it kind of opened my eyes to some certain possibilities and opportunities, and it kind of took off from there.
That's awesome. So I talk to Dolphins players about this topic a lot, that you know, your time in the NFL is a wasting asset. In other words, anyone will take your phone call, right? And your energy needs to be outbound and not inbound, right? A lot of times people just take whatever opportunity is thrown in front of them. A financial advisor is paying attention to them. You're so flattered because you have a few bucks. So you take some random guy without realizing you could get to anybody at Goldman Sachs while you're in the NFL. Right. And so I'm curious, how much energy did you put into sort of planning that next chapter while you were in this media market? Like, were you laying the tracks?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was that I wasn't just sort of poo-pooing it or pushing it off to the side. It's like, yeah, this is sort of, you know, this is fun to do now, and it kind of takes my mind off of football, but ultimately this is not what I want to be. And let's, you know, I'm not going to kid anybody. I'm not going to lie. I still wanted to be in the NFL. I mean, like, you know, Tom Brady's a year older than me. I saw myself having a 20-year career. And obviously that didn't happen, but I think I got lucky, you know, while these opportunities came up throughout my NFL career in the 5-6 years I was in the league, I took them seriously. I really tried to put my best foot forward and give it an honest effort. And I was trying to also, I think, in the evaluation process of it all, be honest with myself and say, hey, I liked doing that. That was fun. I could see myself doing that when I'm done playing versus, or you know what, that really wasn't me. That wasn't a great fit. I think the one thing I've certainly made tons of mistakes in my life over the years. I would say the one thing I think I did right when I was transitioning from football into broadcasting was that I didn't close any doors and I didn't say no a lot early. I said yes to a lot of things to really give myself an opportunity to decide whether or not I like doing it. I never in a million years would have told you that I would have been in the food space by any stretch, hosting shows on Food Network, baking shows, a former NFL player talking about cupcakes and pastries. Never would have said, I would have never entertained that idea, but I'm glad when certain opportunities came along, I said, yeah, you know what? I'll just give it a shot. I'll give it a great effort. I'll put my best foot forward and see how it turns out. And ultimately, I found time and time again, when I've done that, I actually end up learning more about myself. There's actually more self-actualization to me that happens when you do step out of your comfort zone sometimes, give things an honest opportunity, because all it does is open up more opportunities and more avenues and windows. I went from being a very straight line, kind of one-trick pony football guy, and it's sort of spread out to Good Morning America, Daily Mail TV, daytime television, entertainment, Food Network, hosting shows on ABC, and I've been really, really fortunate. But I think saying yes more often times than saying no, at least for me, I think has really been beneficial.
I love that. Yeah, I talk about this a lot too, that you don't have to actually have the ultimate destination figured out, but you have to move in the general direction of your aspiration. And it begins by kind of going low to the ground, like listening to the vibrations like a train coming down and saying, I know I generally want to go in that direction. Let me say yes to things that move me along. This, people put too much pressure on having it sort of all figured out. Can you take us through what it's like to be so young, to be so successful, such a heady job? You're playing in the NFL. And then what was it like to make the decision to walk away? Was it imposed on you, or did you have to come to terms with it?
No, you know, what made it so tough was that I wasn't forced out. It wasn't like, you know, my agent called me one day and said, hey, all 32 teams have said they don't want you. So, you know, what do you want to do? I was at a point where I had gone to Canada for a year. I was playing with the Montreal Alouettes and I was having tons of fun back home in Canada playing football. And, you know, I saw myself either playing in Canada for a while or coming back to the NFL a year later and continuing. The CFL season back in 2006, it ended in November because it gets so cold. Our last game was in November. And then Fox contacted me and said, would you want to broadcast 4 NFL games for us in the month of December? You're not playing football anymore. And I said, yeah, it's perfect. I'll go back down. I'll stay close to the game. I'll watch the games. And I broadcasted these games, had a blast. And then I was right back in training mode, getting ready for training camp in 2007. Agent calls me and says, hey, Fox and ESPN would love you to come and broadcast, but now you have to stop playing football. So that was the difficult decision for me, was walking away from the only thing I'd ever wanted to do since I was 7 years old. Anyone that knows me, that knew me growing up, knows that I ate, slept, breathed football probably more than anybody. I mean, I was a guy, I was insane about it. I had 14 or 15 posters in my bedroom of quarterbacks. I had a giant poster, a collage poster of Joe Montana on my ceiling. It was the only thing I thought about, the only thing I ever wanted to do. And to walk away from that, I can appreciate, certainly I didn't play at the level of a Joe Montana or a Michael Jordan or Brett Favre or any of these guys. But when you watch Peyton Manning at the podium and he's retiring and he's crying, that's not fake. I totally get that. And I think that's for a lot of athletes and a lot of people in a lot of different industries and businesses that really are passionate about something. It's never easy to walk away. So as much as I was excited about the opportunity to be on TV talking about my passion, it's so hard to replace the rush you feel, the high you get from playing professional football. At least it was for me.
Would that opportunity to have been on TV not have materialized had you not put in that work you had done throughout that career, though? You know what I mean? Was it so obvious that you were charismatic you would have been plucked out and gotten an offer anyway once you had taken some time, you know, post-career? Or is it that you had moved simultaneously to explore it, you know, while you were playing?
Yeah, I thought a lot about that. You know, I guess I'll never know now. I know I Troy Aikman, Jason Garrett, there were some other guys that I talked to who had sort of done the same thing I did. They were playing football and then they made the decision to go into broadcasting, go in the booth. And sort of the general consensus, I think, was, hey, dude, you only get X amount, finite amount of years to play. Play as long as you can, exhaust that, and then you can always go in the booth after. The tricky part with TV, though, and with sports broadcasting and with football is that every year, Brett Favre, there's going to be another Brett Favre retiring or a Peyton Manning retiring. Drew Brees is going to retire soon. So is Tom Brady. If those guys want to get into TV broadcasting, they're going to get a seat. And there are only a finite amount of seats at every network. So it wasn't just as simple for me as, yeah, just play as long as you want. TV will always be there. TV might not always be there. You know, I was kind of going in the college football space, and there's Heisman Trophy winners, you know, looking for jobs all the time that ESPN is happy to fill those seats with. So I thought, hey, you know, I've had some success here doing this TV broadcasting. You know, it's, you know, I should ride this wave. And I think really deep down, I thought, if you do it for a year and you absolutely hate it, you're still young enough that you can go back and play and you'll get an opportunity.
I love about deconstructing this choice. I say this all the time. Like, it always looks also effortless and easy in retrospect, but the key to it all is living a very intentional life. When you see somebody who's had unusual success in different areas, it's because they made intentional choices along the way. You making that choice at a moment in time to give up something you really loved, knowing your window might close over here and your window will eventually close over here one way or another, but you may not have an unlimited option on this side. Like, that's probably a huge key decision in your life. To your point, three other guys retire and they take that spot and you may never get your spot. I want to show you something though. It's a great, where is it? Hold on a second. Hold on. I lost it. Great. Is this it? Yeah. Look at that.
Manning and Palmer. That's amazing. Growing up in Africa, I literally owned two football jerseys, Manning number 10 and Palmer number 3. Still cherish them. That's how I discovered the game of football. That's from Aniket Day in Africa. That's amazing. Aniket knows this by now. One of those jerseys is worth a lot more money than the other one. One of them should be framed. It should be above like your fireplace. And the other one, you know, maybe, you know, if it gets cold, you could just kind of, you know, if you need to start a fire, you could kind of, you know, kind of stoke it. That's so cool.
So you're hurting the point. See, now he's seen you on TV. He's like, wow, he became a huge superstar, you know. But no, it's kind of, I was thinking about your story of having 15 posters around your room of all these quarterbacks and the impact you made on people's lives. So you transition. Let's leave football behind for a minute, right? And you begin your broadcast career, right? Mm-hmm. And how did you immediately formulate a new goal? Like, I want to be the best broadcaster I ever was? Or are you sort of playing around in the universe and figuring out what feels right?
Well, I think for me, it was really kind of the same mentality I used when I played football. I just wanted to be competitive and I wanted to work really hard and I just wanted to be the best that I could be. So I studied incredibly, the amount of homework I did to prepare. You know, I kind of had a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a chip on my shoulder. I just knew I had to prove myself. I mean, it was daunting going to a network like ESPN right out of the gate, the worldwide leader in sports, with already this unbelievable assembly and collection of minds, former players, coaches, et cetera, in their college football universe. And I had to sort of carve out my little niche in somewhere in there. To me, the only way to do that was to really grind and work really, really hard. So I didn't go into ESPN and say, I'm going to call this game in X amount of years, or I'm going to be on this studio show. I'm going to be the lead anchor, the lead host, whatever, or analyst on this show by then. I just wanted credibility. I wanted people to respect my opinions. And the only way I thought about I could do that is to work very, very hard. This is crazy. It's been 14 years already, and I really still have that mindset. Like, I've never taken my foot off the gas. It's not a chip on my shoulder. It's just a constant belief that I have to continually push myself and grind and study, because I know how competitive this industry is. And I want to serve our fans and our viewers at home who love the game. And this is just a job I don't take for granted.
And throughout your childhood and life pre-football, were there ever moments when people spotted in you this potential for this leg of your career? Hey, Jesse, you're really well-spoken. Like, I could see you one day on TV. Or, you know, were there ever moments when the universe was giving you that feedback along the way, or did it truly just come out of nowhere?
No, it was funny. When I was on, I don't remember it so much when I was a kid. I was pretty good at public speaking. I was good in drama class. I loved performing. But the thing that I always laugh about, when I was on the San Francisco 49ers, so Alex Smith, Trent Dilfer, and I we'd be in the locker room, and I would always do these Mel Kiper impersonations doing the NFL draft, and I would just riff, and I would go on these like 10-minute long soliloquies, and we'd all be howling laughing. It was just, it was so much fun. And you know, I after doing, you know, being in New York, playing football, where we had a locker room where there was always cameras. We had a lot of personalities in our locker room. We were constantly in front of the cameras answering questions. I just always kind of felt comfortable with it. And so, you know, I think all of that kind of combined, whether public speaking as a kid, drama class, and locker room comfort, I guess you call it, just sort of helped me believe that I'd actually be okay at it.
All right, so let's talk about this food obsession. I know it must be hard to talk to a guy like myself who owns a significant steak and milk bar, one of the best you know, bakery businesses in the United States. And so for that, I apologize because I don't mean to stoke envy. But tell me about
if I had crack pie right now.
I know. We renamed it though, by the way, to conform.
Yeah, I remember you told me that before. I understand it politically, but I guarantee there are a lot of people. Optically, you had to, but there are a lot of people that miss the old man.
It still tastes the same. Mm-hmm. Wait, so where is this love coming from? And where tell us a little bit about the food journey.
So mom was a great cook. I was lucky enough to always eat great food growing up. She had a very global palate. So we ate tons of different types of foods growing up. Ottawa, Canada is extremely multicultural. So I was getting an opportunity to try a lot of different types of foods from a lot of different places. I've always been really interested in it. Again,
Quebecois, how do you say that?
What was it?
How do you say Quebecois?
Quebecois.
Quebecois.
Yeah. It's global fusion.
I don't know how to say it. I've experienced it in Quebec City.
Global fusion, yeah, up in Ottawa and Quebec. I kind of go back again, man. It's funny how like life happens, and there's things that happen in your life that are completely out of control. And one of the biggest impacts in my life, I mentioned it earlier, was getting drafted by the New York Giants. Because when you're drafted, you can't pick where you go. When I chose to go to the University of Florida, that was totally my choice. I could have gone to Ohio State. I could have gone out on the West Coast. I chose Florida. And then that was a fork in the road in my life that took me in a certain direction. The New York Giants drafted me and changed me in so many different ways. I almost got drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs twice. And I so often wonder what would have happened if I had ended up in Kansas City. Who knows? New York City and the media market certainly I think did wonders for my career after football. But also living in this city, and you know this, Matt, the food culture here is just incredible. It's arguably the best in the world. And getting a chance to go to these restaurants and meet these chefs and really kind of get into it completely changed me as well. I've been fortunate since being in the NFL to travel around the world. And food is become one of my biggest passions. I randomly, out of the middle of nowhere, got asked to host a Food Network show in Canada called Recipe to Riches. And that was literally like out of left field. Agent calls one day and says, "You're never going to believe this. I know how much you love food. They want you to host this show. It's right down your alley. You can say no if you want." And you know, I remember telling somebody about it, and they were like, "You're not doing that, dude. You're an ESPN college football analyst. You don't want to lose credibility." And I thought, I'm not going to lose credibility. This is genuine. This is organic to who I am. So I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to have fun. And it again, another example of saying yes. That show led to another show on Food Network, which led to Holiday Baking Championship in the U.S., which led to a show with Martha Stewart here in the U.S. And it's just continued to open doors for saying yes. But that's essentially, you know, my food journey started at home in Canada and then really sort of exploded once I got here to New York.
I love that story. I talk about this topic a lot, about the idea of never letting anybody put you in a box. I think that happens to athletes too. Sometimes they put themselves in a box. They feel maybe a little bit insecure. Who cares about my opinion? Or I'm just a jock, whatever. And interesting how there is this collective pressure too, to kind of conform and to make your life a tidy narrative. I would get that too all the time. Like, I can't quite make sense of your career. You were in politics and you're on Shark Tank. Now you teach at Harvard. Like, yeah. I'm just being me. I mean, and what the worst part about life is if you submit to that pressure to create a tidy narrative around your life, because when in the end you realize no one really gives a shit. Like, no one, they spend way too much time worrying about their own life to determine whether your life fit perfectly in some description. So what, the bio is incoherent. Like, you had fun and you're better off for it. I say that to everybody watching right now. If your parents are putting pressure or society's putting pressure, wherever you live, to sort of conform, like, in the end, no one's keeping score except for your soul. And so you'll have to live with the consequences of trying to submit to this universal convention and orthodoxy. I have a degree sitting right next to me from Fordham. And never even took the bar exam. And yeah. I don't care. I love looking at it. It's a piece of wallpaper, very expensive, but who cares? So I'm not a lawyer, you know. And I look at you and you almost seem delightful and like you're just sucking life in everywhere you can find it and you don't really care. You're now on a banking show, you were a quarterback, you know, you're on.
Yeah, like it's a great point you make. Like, I just think you have to be true to yourself. You're right, because ultimately we're the ones that have to sleep at night. I remember when I did The Bachelor. you know, that was another big moment in my career. And it happened when I was playing football. And I had a lot of people say, dude, absolutely do not do The Bachelor. If you want to be taken, you're an NFL player, you're tough, it's this macho thing, you're not going on a show, handing out a bunch of flowers and talking about your feelings and looking for a potential wife. You cannot do that. No one will take you seriously. And I, what you just said a second ago really sort of resonated with me. I remember talking to my parents about it. And at first, they were like, we think it's great. Like, we think you'd have fun with it. You know, you might not get married, but it'd be a great experience. And you can just be yourself. And I thought, Dad, and the other thing is, no one's going to talk about this in a year, because the show's going to go on. People's lives go on. People are acting like you're going to get branded this. And for the remainder of your day on earth, you're going to be the guy that, and it's like, this was at a time when reality TV was kind of starting. It was new, it was fresh, and athletes were just so taboo against it. You look at reality TV now, it's full of athletes. Dancing with the Stars, there's an athlete that wins that every single year. Athletes have their own reality TV shows now. So, I mean, it's you know, we're so narrow-minded if we allow people to box us in, because things change and times change, perceptions change. And it's changed so much since I played. I agree with everything you just said. For anybody listening out there, follow your heart, follow what, you know, your dreams and your goals, be true to yourself. I think that is one of the biggest keys to being happy in life.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the context. I've been around NFL teams for, I don't even, 15 years, right? And I proudly do not render an opinion on play on the field. And the reason why is I've noticed so much energy and hours go into it that if you actually don't know how the play was written up, what was drawn, very hard to judge the outcome. Mm-hmm. I look at your life that way too. Only you know really the play you're calling, not anybody else watching from the outside in. So they don't have the full context. It's like when I dropped out of high school. I knew that that was a crazy decision from the outside looking in. I knew that I was going to have to explain that away and go to law school and do all the things to explain to people that I wasn't some derelict kid, whatever. But I also knew that I was going to start college at 16. I was going to get out of poverty 5 times faster. I was going to help take care of my sick mother, which no one had visibility into. These were all decisions that only I knew because I drew up the play. Nobody from the outside looking in. It was also, why bother explaining? It's the other thing you start realizing, like, spend so much energy trying to explain the play to somebody else. And yeah. Then you're like, why am I bothering? Just enjoy the touchdown. You know what I mean? Just dance in the end zone with me. Now I'm just going to keep extending the metaphor. But it's really important. And I look at my own life probably the way you look at your own life. Like, it's wonderful when you draw up those plays and they actually work out. And everyone told you, don't do it. Not that you want to spite people, because that's a waste of energy too.
Yeah.
But the way you've architected your life, now who gives a shit about The Bachelor? It's awesome. And by the way, you don't know how people are going to judge it. I judge that as saying, I would never have the courage to go on that show. That tells me that Jesse is open to different experiences, has courage, doesn't take himself too seriously, doesn't have a big ego. Those are all like assets as opposed to liabilities, right? I don't look at you as a fame seeker or whatever else one might think.
No, you're right. It's basically every Canadian. It's basically
power of juxtaposition, having done one thing and doing another thing, and how those two are going to line up next to each other and telegraph something about yourself. Like, even with me, the same person that can go on Shark Tank but also teach at Harvard, that's a very different, you can now judge me for being on like a TV personality, but hard to judge that, right? And like, again, unless you know where you're going, don't worry about how people are going to look at it, you know? And now you're like a big painting, you know, you're a composition, NFL quarterback, baking show, ESPN, Bachelor, the whole bit.
Yeah. It's like, it's funny. And, you know, to touch on what you just said, I mean, I think if you're calling your own plays and in your heart of hearts, you sort of, you know, the why as to why you're doing something. Like, I don't believe we should all just walk outside and be like, I don't know, it's going to be up to chance. Do think you do have to have sort of some direction and a plan and some thought put into it. But I think if you do things with honest intentions and with pure intentions, then even if they don't work out, you know, you'll still sleep well because you won't regret things. It's like, you know, Michael Jordan always says, you'll miss 100% of the shots you don't take. In sports, you know, you got to play the game. You know, we play football with the intent on winning, and we prepare to do that all week long. It doesn't always go your way, but you know, after those games, if you know you put everything into it, and you left your heart out on the field, ultimately, you know, you can be at peace with that. And I think more often than not, through the different decisions I've made, that's been the case. I'd love to sit here honestly and tell you, like, oh, I knew when I did The Bachelor that that was going to open up all these windows for me post. That would be a total lie. I just was literally 24 years old, and I was like, hey, I'm young. This is a cool opportunity. I'm going to go be myself. Like you said, I have no problem making fun of myself. The guys in the locker room are going to kill me for this, but we're all great friends and we're going to watch the show together and laugh, and I can laugh at myself and it's great. This will be a cool thing. I involved some of my teammates in the show and we had fun. Years later, you know, the Food Network asked me to work for them because of The Bachelor. Not, you know, the NFL thing was a part of it, but The Bachelor opened me up to a totally different demographic than I was getting playing football. Same thing with Good Morning America, same thing with Daily Mail, and some of these other jobs. It's, again, just being true to myself, not being afraid to take the risk, being comfortable with it, not worrying about what other people think. I think all of that really sort of kind of has been a big key for me. I've been lucky.
I always give that piece of advice too to people, is that no one thing is ever the thing. And I mean that negatively and positive. You think something happens in your life and this is the thing that has hobbled you forever, or sort of like the die is now cast because you made a big mistake. That's not true. Also, you do something great and that thing is not self-executing. You know, I went on Shark Tank 2 seasons. That's great. I still have to make magic out of it. I still have to write the book or whatever else opportunities that opened up. I still have to pursue it. So what's nice about it is you're always at the helm, but like your point, walking out and just saying yes to everything for chance, that doesn't play out either. Can you talk a little bit about, I'm curious, what different skill sets do you have to employ when you're on ESPN versus when you're hosting your own show?
So ESPN is sort of a bit of a different animal. So it's obviously it's football, and I'm basically living in 45-second sound bites. So I do a ton of prep and research throughout the week. I'm watching a lot of film. There's like 129 college teams. There's a lot to sort of have to keep your the finger on the pulse of. And then, you know, when we're in studio, 45-second sound bites, you have to learn how to be contrite, how to get your point across, intro, back up your point, put a bow on it, and move on, and just sort of keep the conversation flowing. You know, and you can show a little bit of personality, but really it's analytical. I think the fun thing about some of these hosting gigs is I really get to kind of, you know, be lighter. I don't always have to be in a suit. I'm not talking about football. I'm not necessarily a quote unquote expert on the food, on holiday baking. I love the food. I love the holidays. I love the contestants and the judges. Dude, holidays. Like, you're just like cranberry and turkey. Gaining 15 pounds. I'm eating 19 donuts backstage. You know, that's great. You know, like I really like people. And I like to learn about people. I like to ask questions. And I like to help share people's stories. So I think throughout my years hosting on some of these other jobs, it's, you know, it kind of allows me to tap into a different skill set, but, you know, one that's certainly genuine.
Hey, if we're doing this manifestor mindset 10 years from now, what new vertical would have opened up in your life that doesn't exist right now that might surprise me? Forecast your future Jesse self.
Maybe something with animals. Maybe like something like Dog Whisperer.
Really? Manifesting in a TV context or as a veterinarian or something?
Yeah, definitely not a veterinarian. I wouldn't trust myself with that again. See, this is a good example of not necessarily being an expert in something, but just because you're not an expert in something doesn't mean you can't do it. I think that's a good lesson for people at home as well. You don't have to, you know, you have a Harvard degree. It's on your wall.
I don't know. I teach there. I have a law degree. It's from
Okay. You have a law degree. And it's definitely going to help. But it doesn't mean you can't somehow get into that space. Yep. And be successful. Have fun doing it. I don't know. It's like, you know, my fiance and I just got a new mini Aussie Doodle.
See, I wasn't going to tell everybody out here who may have, you know, been a woman watching this or anybody that you are, in fact, engaged. But, like, I just going to say that.
Yeah, it's okay. No, it's out there. It's on Instagram. People can go to Jesse Palmer at on Instagram. I'm
not hiding it. My wife said, who's this? That's like, it's Jesse.
Yeah. She said, the wedding got postponed due to COVID. So she now has an extra year to say no and back out. So I'm just kind of trying to keep
it. I met your wonderful wife, sweet wife. We went for a walk. You guys seem so happy together. We were at Madison Park, remember?
Yeah.
In simpler times, you know.
She's my better half. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
You guys running all over the world pre-COVID, you know, having great meals together and just seem like you're enjoying each other.
Yeah. No, it's been great, man. It's been great. And being here in the city, honestly, throughout all this, you know, obviously we can't go too far, but that's how you really know you love somebody when you know, you can be in a New York City apartment in the middle of a pandemic and still not kill each other.
Right. Let's take a couple of questions, Heather. I'll hand it over to you to tee them up, but I'll start. So, you know, in terms of you using this time, correct, like to think about your life, anything that stands out that'll be the legacy of this era for you in a positive way that you were able to attack more thoughtfully than you were before? Or are you just so busy with your job as it was that your life hasn't changed that much? Just curious.
Yeah, you know, for me, I kind of, you know, I'm sort of awful football analogy. I'm sort of like I play one play at a time, and I feel like that's how I'm doing it right now. I feel really, really busy. I've been really blessed, really fortunate with work and these different shows, and also some new philanthropy with Wounded Warriors Project and some other stuff I'm doing as well to help try to give back bring a lot more attention to some really great causes and some great organizations. But for me, honestly, at this point, it's, you know, one play at a time and trying to put my best foot forward. And, you know, again, trying to say yes to different things and sort of, you know, letting it all kind of unfold as it goes. I think that's kind of more the focus right now.
For you. All right, Jesse, today from Eric, Kaya, hopefully I said okay. Jesse, today, what's one thing you are really happy for having to choose broadcasting instead of football?
Well, the obvious thing is it's way better on my body. I wake up now and I'm not sore, so that's fantastic. No tackling in broadcasting. But I think, you know, the interesting thing for me, what's really been nice too, is it's kept me attached to the thing I love the most in the world. I still feel connected to the game. I think even more importantly, though, I still feel really challenged. I'm in a space now. I'm doing a job where I feel pressure. I study hard because I know on live TV I have to deliver. I don't want to get stumped on live TV. I don't want to fumble on live TV. And so there is a fire lit under me. I think that's been important for me. When I got done playing football, I had a lot of stress in my life, obviously, playing football for a lot of reasons. But it wasn't like when I got done, all of a sudden I took my foot off the gas and I was like, everything else is just icing on the cake. I really don't care how well I do. I still care a lot. I care more than most people about how my show goes. I mean, I prepared for a live hour show that we had on ESPN last night on our top 25 show. I prepared for 3 hours for that show because I wanted to deliver and I wanted to be good. So
very little dirty secret of success in life. Like, you never trade on the embers of your past success if you truly want to go do great things. Like, I tore myself with caring. Like, you know, it only can look effortless. It never is effortless. I don't know how you feel, but I never leave anything to chance. And anything I do that is new.
People, I guess they call it different stuff. You know, a lot of people say fear of failure. That's a real motivator.
Me too, right? Like, you're letting myself down too. I am really hard on myself. Like, hard on myself when I didn't leave it all on the field. Yeah. When I left it all on the field, it's almost like the universe talking back to me, like, well, it is what it is. Like, you reach the ceiling of your capacity.
And we're all going to have bad days, bad games. But to your point, like, you worked this hard in your life, and now you get an opportunity to be on Shark Tank.
Right.
Huge show with a huge reputation and a massive following. You don't want to just like roll in there and just roll your helmet out there with those guys and just kind of bring your C-plus game and just look average.
I remember turning to you because you had come on set too. I remember turning to my wife and I said to her after, I said, that was the hardest reach of my life, like in being uncomfortable. And then I felt almost melancholy, like, I can't think of anything that would be more uncomfortable than this. And I got a little bit like sad, like, wait, it can't stop here.
Yeah.
And then teaching in a classroom would be really uncomfortable. You know, and that's how my journey towards Harvard started. But like, I like being honest and open up about that like, I don't want to leave people with the impression that anything comes easy to me because I'm perpetuating a lie and I'm creating a distance between myself and anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's not fair, right? Everyone out there should know, it really is hard. I feel like an imposter half the time. You know what I mean? I'm beating myself up. And so are you. I know you are. And so therefore, we are no different. And and the world is still available to you in spite of all that, right? And yeah. Nothing is like a tidy little arc, like where you arrive at a certain place and you're completely self-possessed. Maybe it is for you. Not for me.
No, it's not for me either. I'm the same way. I remember Kerry Collins in the NFL. He told me, he's like, dude, you have to be like this all the time. Good days, bad days. You got to be able to come back down here. And I know that when I played football, emotionally, I would ride this crazy roller coaster. I've gotten better at sort of trying to flatline that. But no doubt, like you just said, if I have a bad show, like I'll beat myself up over it for 10 minutes in the car. And then, but then you got, again, like a quarterback. Well,
I'm never a victim. I don't know about you.
You got to play the next play. You got to move on.
Back up again, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jesse, I'm curious about this. What does your morning routine look like that gets you ready to seize the day?
So I'm an early morning person. I mean, at least for my standards, I get up usually around 6:45. I like to get an espresso. I get to work right away. I'll do about an hour and a half, 2 hours of studying. And then I have to get a workout in before 10 a.m. For me, whatever it is, I just feel like if the blood gets going, it just gets me going throughout the course of the day. I'm thinking better. I'm awake. I have better energy. I sleep better. I try to take care of myself. I eat healthy throughout the day, but I really do believe that what you put into your body and how you treat yourself and how you take care of yourself, I think it comes across on how we perform when we're on TV or whatever we're doing as well. But I like to get up and get at it. I'm not a stay in bed and just sort of let the world start happening and then I'll just catch up.
That's good. Let's do two more. Heather, you got a couple more? And then, all right, Matt, thanks for doing this. Thank you, Andrew, for paying attention. Were your present mentors? Do you practice daily affirmations? What are they? And how do you qualify new potential to bring into your inner circle? Let's do those two, your daily affirmations. And then, you know, how do you let new people into your life?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, it's just, I think grateful is what I try to remember the most. And I try to just kind of reinforce the most. Just understanding and appreciating and being present and aware of the opportunities that I have, that I've been given. I've been lucky enough to, I grew up and I had a really strong work ethic instilled in me by my parents, and I've been able to take advantage of a lot of these, but I'm not a fool in the sense that I think I did all this. And this is all because of me, and I manifested this by myself. I do appreciate everyone that's helped me get to this point and all the opportunities that have come. So gratefulness would be number one. Potential people into my inner circle, like-minded people. Simple as that. Positive. I'm a big positive person. I don't have time for negative energy, for doubting, things like that. People that have similar aspirations as mine, doesn't have to be broadcasting at all. It could be anything. You're passionate about something. You're positive. If I think you're a really, really good person, I'm willing to hang out with you all day, all week, all year. Love it.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple. Number one, I always like to say I'm a pseudo Buddhist because you never quite arrive, at some state of nirvana. But I do return to the same book all the time called Buddhism Plain and Simple, especially when I feel like I've lost my way, only because it brings me back to the present. I do feel like the present is the only gift we have in life and the only thing you're guaranteed. And it just makes me incredibly peaceful and makes me play with like a free hand where I'm not so worried about the consequences of things. I'm always trying to lower the stakes so I can play with the house's money, like I always like to say. And then and two, meditate on the idea that I was born whole, that I'm not incomplete. I'm not missing anything. I'm not seeking some type of perfection. Like, we are born with everything we need. We die with everything we need, and everything else is just part of life and experiencing it. But you can easily fall into a place where you feel perpetually imperfect and you're looking for something to augment, whether it's in your spouse or your job, one more thing will make me whole. And I think it's important to meditate that, that you were born whole. And then three, for me, bliss is living in a perpetual state of a growth mindset. I'm always expanding and trying to push out my boundaries. So I ask myself a simple question every single day to determine what is the highest and best use of this version of Matt on day 11,300, whatever it is. And is, what can I do today that I couldn't do yesterday that brings me closer to what I want to do tomorrow? Because as you accumulate more experience, like Jesse did when he was in the NFL, well, now that he's in the NFL, now he can maybe dabble in broadcasting, right? Now that he's done a little bit of broadcasting and has been on TV, now suddenly he's got his own baking show because he did The Bachelor. Like, your life is going, you new opportunities are constantly opening up to you based upon what you're doing today that bring you closer to something. And that was what was great about Shark Tank. I always say, I don't think I'm teaching at HBS if I don't have Shark Tank in the profile and the 40, you know, years of work that came before that. So I would argue, I don't know if this is universally true. I feel like it's true for me. It's probably true for Jesse and true for a lot of people. Living a life of perpetual growth is blissful, because it's never really then about whatever it is you achieved. It's the mere act of striving to achieve something. So I'm not saying it's right for everybody, because it is a little bit uncomfortable. Like, I spend a lot of my time just like uncomfortable because I'm trying to achieve something, you know, new. But I meditate on that question every day to keep myself disciplined. And like Jesse said, in terms of letting new people into my life, what's great, you get to curate who's around you. And then as time goes by, you realize how important it is and how much those people affect the outcome. My wife is the greatest force multiplier known to mankind, civilization, shouldn't even say mankind. She is a force. And as a result, has helped me unlock my greatest potential and is like hanging out with my best friend all day long. So I made that choice, best choice I ever made. You get to choose too, who's around you all the time. So you want to be so judicious. Like, and I would say anybody, if you have people in your life and you say, well, they're really great because they bring me back down to earth. I never met anybody who wants to be brought back down to earth. I do not want to be brought back down to earth. I want to fly away like a helium balloon. You know what I mean? And so I would always ask yourself, like, who's around you? Are they dragging you down, or are they taking you to places you know, you never dreamed possible? I didn't mean to go on a long dissertation, but I think this stuff is so important, especially on election, the day after election day, Jesse, when we're all struggling. It's a very cathartic day out there. So
it is. Positivity right now is good.
Let's do one more, and then I'm going to let you go. I don't know, Heather, if you got another one, or this is actually a fun one to add on. There we go. I was going to ask that question, Jesse. There was one rule you change or add in the NFL. What would it be?
Overtime. Change overtime. Make it like college. Give each team the ball. Give them one chance. You can put it on the 25 or the 20. I don't care. But this whole thing where you're kicking off, and if a team goes down and scores, they win, whatever. Like, just college football overtime rules. Just put it at the 20-25 and give each team an opportunity. That's it.
There you have it. All right. Excellent. Well, all right. So I want to hear, tell us all the places we can see you. Just if you could lay it out for everybody who wants people to see you. So now they're going to want to seek you out. Just start with TV, and then we'll go.
Yeah, so ESPN, college football, that's obviously going on now. Holiday Baking Championship on Food Network, that's airing every Monday night. That's exciting. On social media, really, Jesse Palmer on Instagram. There'll be a lot of food, a lot of football, a lot of dogs, a lot of New York City, and a lot of travel. And that's essentially it. There's an exciting project coming up. I'm not allowed, I think, legally to say anything. There'll be another show coming out pretty soon, which I'm real stoked about. That's kind of it. I'm living and breathing college football and baking right now. That's
and of course they go naturally together. Well, everybody watching, I'm sure you're drinking in Jesse's positivity. I happen to come to know him well over the last couple of years. We share the same agent, just been able to look into his eyes and his heart, and he's exactly what he seems right here. So support him, find him, follow him, send him positive energy. I know we're just getting started. I'm fascinated by doing this again in 5 years and seeing with this totally different area that we probably neither of us are, probably not even animals, even though that would be very far afield. But I just know that the universe is going to give back to you what you put out, and that's awesome. So
it's good. Listen, great being on with you. And I know I've seen some of the comments and some of your viewers and what they're saying. And it's so true. This is a great space for positivity. I appreciate all the sage wisdom you're sharing with people professionally, but also I think personally. I think this is something the world needs right now, more than ever in our lifetime. So it's great what you're doing, man. Thanks for having me.
So I release you, myself, and everybody out there now to go hit refresh. Now you can resume to your regular schedule programming and see what's going on in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But anyway, thanks everybody. I'll be back next week. Thank you, Jesse. And I'll see you soon.
You got it, man.
All right. Take care.